In ancient times, decisions regarding governance were made by men at the forum of a community or some sort of jurisdiction. That has evolved a bit to the point that we elect representatives and they spend time in capital cities and in local towns and city halls speaking on our behalf. Or so we hope. There is an abundance of discussion about the role of our MPs, MPPs, or MLAs, as well as city and regional councillors and school board trustees. Defensively, they claim they are representing our wants and needs to the body they were elected to. But are they? And how do they really know what we want? Welcome to Exit 425. It's where we live. My name is Steve Ray, and today's guest is Murray Simser. Murray is a fascinating person with an equally fascinating background working on a modern version of that forum. That tool is called Citizen AI. Murray is going to explain it to me and to you, hopefully like we're seven-year-olds. Murray, thank you so much for meeting me at Exit 425.
Well, thank you very much. Look, I'm delighted to be here. I think it's my second time on the show. Quite a few years ago, I think you had me on a bit of an interview, and I'm delighted to be back.
What is Citizen with no E? Please remember that between the tech and the civics involved, you need to speak to me like I'm a seven-year-old.
I am going to. And let me say this. I'll explain it in the simplest possible way. A democracy is supposed to count everybody's opinions and then do something about it, okay, for the maximal number of people. That simply doesn't happen today. And so what Citizen does is counts everybody's opinion on every subject before government every day, and thereby producing the data that is required by our governors to make decisions that are in our interests, not in theirs. And I'll just ask you a question to put things into perspective. How do you think democracy's doing today? And if the answer is great, then Citizen's not for you, I promise you. But if, like most people on both sides of the aisle, you think it's not great, and in fact it's frustrating, and it may in fact be harmful, that's the purpose of this. We want to change that. We want democracy to be the greatest thing. And I'll say one last thing. It's designed to protect the most significant, powerful tool human beings have ever developed in all of human history to create health and wealth. And if we don't protect that legacy that was gifted to us, we're not going to live in these beautiful societies that we call home.
Now, even over the last year, Citizen AI has evolved quite a lot, hasn't it?
Yes. Yeah, there's a couple of things. It surprisingly technically hasn't evolved as much as other people would think. But as with all things that have a marketing side to them, where you have to get people's attention, we did have to re-engineer the way we articulated this to the world, because people weren't understanding the concept of political big data and a social network that brings people together. It didn't make much sense in people's worlds. But all of a sudden, at about a month before, say a month before, 2 months before, say a year and 2 or 3 months ago, OpenAI came onto the scene, and all of a sudden, absolutely everybody understood what AI was for the first time. The consciousness has since exploded, and not a small part, because now people can use AI to ask them what AI is and tell me in plain English. And now I'm willing to bet that almost everybody uses AI on a regular basis if you work. And so, you know, the time came for us to start to say to people what Citizen really was. And that's where we added AI to the name Citizen, so they actually understood what it was. But more than that, we could now talk about our chatbot. And the chatbot's called Democracy GPT. Now, this was always in the cards, but to call something Democracy GPT before OpenAI showed up was a fool's errand. And now, indeed, we've done it. Now, beyond the marketing, we always had the sort of naming conventions. We always had a plan that required us to build multiple generations of prototypes and test them with Canadians and around the world. And we did that. And so we completed the fourth generation prototype. In fact, that one was announced, you'll remember, at an event at Mars, Discovery District down here in Toronto. And then the sort of testing happened after an event at Massey College at the University of Toronto, a little bit after that. And so we've done four generations of coding, four generations of prototype, and the version 5, as we're calling it, which is the first what we'll call release candidate, sort of using the Microsoft terminology, will come out in the next couple of months. And we're actually in the process right now of coding and engineering that. But people are going to see a new app this summer come down into the app stores. And that app will include the Democracy GPT chatbot, which it looks a lot like Bard AI, or now called Gemini, or Copilot, or ChatGPT. These are all large language models. Ours leverages those large language models, but it also adds first-party data from our platform into it and a bunch of tools that we've built that augment that large language model so it can give specific, accurate answers to regular questions about what's going on in people's heads. So, for instance, what do people in Durham like fiscally? This may have helped the different parties in the most recent election, and it may, in fact, have enabled them to sort of foresee some challenges that they were facing. And that's the promise of those types of generative technologies. Now, a large language model, I'll just say this. Everybody is astonished by large language models because, look, it's fun. It's utterly indistinguishable from magic as far as we're concerned the first few times you see it. But then you get used to it and you start to realize that it's really good, but it's far from great. Mm. Okay, and the difference between somebody who plays hockey in the MTHL and somebody who plays in the NHL or the OHL, there's not a great difference between the best players in each of those leagues. But to get between one and the other takes an extraordinary amount of heavy lifting. And you're going to see AI models, people are going to be less astonished by them and more frustrated with them because of the nonsense that they're going to be producing. And we've recently saw an example of that type of nonsense that was being produced. I don't know if you saw the example in the United States where Gemini was issuing, they said, show me the founding fathers. And out of an interest in trying to be inclusive, best laid plans, the founding fathers were all black. Okay. And so you started to see how generative platforms are as weak as the algorithms that are put inside of them. And that weakness, I will point out, is going to take decades and decades and decades to solve. Let me just say this. We did not end up with candy bar mobile phones, okay? The perfect form for a device. You stick it in your pocket and off you go, supercomputer, until about, when did RIM come out? 99? So, you know, it took us 25 years to get to the perfected phone. And generative AI is that phone that you remember the phone in the movie Wall Street? You know, the guy was sort of standing there doing this. Well, you know, the difference between this and this is 25 years. And I think you're going to find generative platforms will follow the same progress before we get to a point where, say, a science AI could be relied upon. Okay.
And you just rekindled an image I've had in my head a number of times of our mutual friend Mark Keeley when he and I were working on a project for Rene Sutens, and Mark had a cutting edge technology in a briefcase, and it looked like if you put wheels on it, would have looked like a Honda Civic. So,
$9,000. I mean, it's you think, and it was $5 a minute. You think about that progress. That's where we are today in AI terms. We haven't even scratched the surface of what AI is capable of doing. In fact, I'll argue that just like the internet, let me give you a sort of an analogy that's helpful. When the internet came along, taxi companies, okay? I think you know where this is going, but taxi companies, something we all inherently understood. There were two ways to look at what the internet could do to sort of the personal transportation sector, like taxis and the like. The first one was to say, dispatch becomes internet-enabled, the business stays the same, okay? And this is what local companies here in Toronto did called Beck and a variety of other traditional taxi companies. And there was another group of people that decided technology could do so much more. and it could actually alter the business model. Now, I'm not picking sides here, okay? One of my uncles, he drove cab, and he did quite well, and it was a good business for him, okay? But the nature of that business was evolving away from relevance, okay? And he retired, so he's not fussed about it. But the nature of what Uber did was they were the first taxi conceptual thing that evolved the business model based on the arrival of the new technology. In other words, what could you replace in the business using that technology? Today, we're just like Beck. We're taking AI and we're trying to bake it into whatever we're doing. We're not quite sure how to use it, but we haven't reinvented our business models yet. Everybody thinks it's going to be you just talk and it's going to produce, I don't know, in your case, it could be produce the show from text and you and I show up and you don't even have to do the show. That's a way of thinking about how to do today's work. But what happens if actually AI becomes a host and becomes its own interviewer and your sidekick, and then it can start to generate all kinds of stuff in different realms, like augmented reality and the like? These are things that you haven't contemplated by using your traditional sort of podcast, radio outlets that would typically exist. And so I think AI is going to modify all of politics for the better. And I hope that our company is the one that succeeds in doing it. But we think we've got a transformational view of how politics actually could work, not just an e-government play that'll help people be better electors. That's what we're trying to achieve in this new era.
As part of the honoring of our late Prime Minister, Brian Mulroney, media played a clip several times of Mr. Mulroney talking about how Canada needs to be governed as people really want it from the center, not just the left, not just the right or extreme versions of those, but the center and the somewhat neutral but not benign part of what is referred to as the political spectrum. How can citizen AI support this?
So let's talk about why that's, because that's an anecdote if you think about it. And we always seem to look back on politicians from the past and we do look at them as the great bringers together. So as a consequence, Brian Mulroney in particular was a bit of a centrist. Because he had to bring the liberals that were sort of within the liberal fold into the conservative fold, and the majority he got was unprecedented. I mean, I don't think we'd seen anything like it if I'm remembering correctly. But the concept of centrist is almost a moral thing. And it should be a moral imperative in politics, and I'll tell you why. If you do the math and you sort of follow real opinions on things, okay? And you look at distributions of opinions. Social media expresses only the extremes. That's what people generally see. And so you get this sort of skewed view. So let's set that aside. And now let's talk about public opinion polling, okay? It turns out that there's a dramatic statistical differences between capturing everybody's opinion every day and a sample of everybody's opinion every day. Okay, it's roughly the equivalent of driving down a highway using dead reckoning and a stopwatch versus a clear windshield and a speedometer. Okay, and a steering wheel. It's not the same thing. And it turns out that there are very small differences between the two. But when you capture everybody's opinions every day, apparently extreme opinions disappear. And what I mean by that is it's not that they don't exist. It's that there's this huge body of people that don't talk, okay? And they're what you'd call the centrist silent majority, if you want to think about it like that. These are the people that move elections, okay, one way or the other. There's always going to be a bunch of people on either side that are sort of religious about it. But there's a non-small percentage of people that are in the middle that really don't change their minds about much very often. Okay, and they like things to be a certain way, and all they do is try to pick the one that's going to attach to that person. And if you can capture that, it turns out that the extreme points of view become irrelevant to the politicians, because they're going to look at this and say, well, I'm not going there, because then that's this group here, or I'm not going here. Look, there's the meat. That's who we have to satisfy. And we can get the largest amount of satisfaction in society if we do the policy, say, thus. Okay, let's say there are three choices. Full market, full government solution, and something in between. You end up always finding common ground, okay, with each other. And the reason you find common ground is because there's nobody banging on your head trying to tell you what to do and say inside of Citizen. Okay, you do actually get competing points of view, and not just from Citizen. You get them from journalists, you get them from politicians, you get them from vested parties. They're all accredited. They all agree to follow the rules. The content is moderated by an AI. It's also moderated by a human in the exception process. And there's sort of a Robert's Rules of Order inside of Citizen, if you want to think about it like this. In other words, behave yourself or get the hell out, okay? Or you'll be in trouble in some way, shape, or form. So what that means is we've created the perfect deliberative poll in a digital platform. If you want to think about what this functionally is, it's at the simplest level, it's obviously more complex than that, but at the simplest level, a deliberative poll is basically like a jury system. Okay. The judge tells the people what to think and what choices they have, and then you get to choose, but you get informed before you choose with quality information that you can rely on that you're not distrustful of. Okay. And you get it from first party and third party, and everybody's working towards the same goal. And if you do that, you can get Catholics and Protestants to agree in Northern Ireland to solve problems, okay? And I would argue that's probably one of the most intractable issues in the world until perhaps the Palestinian-Israeli conflicts of modern day age. But the truth is, this was even studied and proven. So Stanford it carries on a study called America in One Room with, I think it's Freedom House or a few others. And this, the results are unequivocal. There are no third rail issues. There are only third rail issues when the opposing people who are competing also control the information that's being delivered to those that have to choose. And by the way, those of us that have lives that are outside of politics, we don't have time to spend all day long rifling through paper to find out what's good and bad information. So what do? We look at these politicians, who's the most trustworthy? And then we just, okay, well, I'm going to go with that because it's a pain in the ass and I don't want to do it. That system gets replaced with something that enables the most sophisticated players like Mark Keeley, okay? And say somebody who's less sophisticated from the working class that has no training in politics, but, you know, they're great citizens. They work their asses off. They're carpenters or tradesmen. They make real money, okay? Not this fake money university degrees make. And these people need to have a system where they can opine and they don't have to be expert, because we're already expert at building our damn houses and roads and airplanes and, okay? We need them to be baked into the system nonetheless. And that's what Citizen does. It takes that concept of America in One Room, puts it into an app, and then it creates this sort of national consciousness that allows everybody to participate in politics for just a few clicks a day. You know, you might miss four reels. So it's really not offensive in terms of, you know, the heaviness here. You don't have to become a member of another social network and participate. Like all that crap that everybody seems to think is out there. Nobody wants another social network on their phone, okay? Like it's – so Citizen aims – to get everybody's opinion with good information, with the aim to counting all of them and demonstrating precisely what the people want in a measurable way. And then we will allow anybody to access that through our chatbot at DemocracyGPT, and they can fight over how best to achieve it in Parliament. But no longer will Parliament have the ability to set the agenda. And therefore, we will reduce the extremism.
And that's what a comprehensive answer to that question. And you touched on getting involved. And again, you touched on the idea that literally anybody can be involved. So how do people actually become participants? And I think you've addressed another one of my questions, which is, will this produce a different class of civic participant other than just being involved? So you've touched on the question I also have about exclusivity. Like, there is none. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's and by exclusivity, you mean what? Just so I'm
so
clear.
So, like, nobody's – everybody's welcome. Is that correct?
Not only welcome. Everybody is wanted, and their berth is waiting for them, okay? You're a Canadian. You're in. And I don't care what your views are, okay? Now, my AI is going to care how you express them, though. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it might tell you, like, you know, Grammarly for stupid. Don't do that, because if you do, your reputation score goes right down. Perhaps not the F word in the middle of a statement. That is an ad hominem attack. Like, we've coded an AI to tell people to chill out. Okay. And we enforce the R version of Robert's Rules of Order on the platform using that. And we have a reputation score to keep people behaving, okay? Oh, you want me to take your security pass away from you? You can't get into Parliament this week, you know, because speakers threw you out on your ear. We're going to use the same sort of thesis to create a credible environment. But then once you do that, the sort of welcomeness that you talked about, it's a matter of downloading an app, clicking and logging in, and you are now baked into the infrastructure of your Canadian civic duty. Now, here's the cool part. Will it create more civic awareness or benefit, I think you asked? And the answer is it absolutely will. In addition to all the info it's going to have in one central place. So in other words, the entire government that you care about in your pocket. And we're not trying to replace Service Canada, for instance, okay? They've got their own stuff. What we're trying to do is capture people's opinion as it relates to the legislative calendar of the country. So from speech from the throne to prorogation, okay? And then there'll be an election portion that'll replace everything that's in there during elections for you, okay? But at the end of the day, the whole purpose of having a berth for every person is that this country has 31.5 million voters, and we want 31.5 million voters on the platform. Only then will this be a success, and it'll be a success long before that. But what I mean is that's what we consider to be the goal. No one left behind. The Canadians speak with a single voice in a powerful system that they themselves own. Now, number two, we've got them behaving. We've got them together. Now we have to make sure they're capable of giving informed consent. This is number three. Which means the platform's going to have an education component. I don't mean you have to take courses and stuff, okay? What I mean is, using modern technologies, we will send small little snippets to people that we have determined require this information prior to them achieving this, and we'll do it so that they don't even notice. You know, I don't want to have to tell you, hey, do you know what Parliament is? Well, you and I both know. But do you know that 95% of the population does not? Now, that's not an indictment on anybody. It's pathetic our education system hasn't trained it, okay? And if they have, they haven't placed enough emphasis on it. But we're going to do that. And so every person on this platform is going to get a measured increase in their civic knowledge and a measured increase in their civic participation. And we're even going to – it's become an old term now, but we're even going to measure your civic performance. We're going to give you points for it. And we're going to level you up, and we're going to grade you, and we're going to give you certification that you've achieved these different levels. And with each new level comes new responsibilities or benefits on the platform. Like, you can be a moderator in small group environments if you have achieved a certain threshold on the platform. Like, you can start to comment on posts when you've achieved a certain level of knowledge. Like, in other words, you will earn the right, based on your civic performance, to participate actively on this platform. And that, in the end, say 10 years from now. So your question was, how does this improve the sort of civic environment of Canada? From 10 years from now, everybody will know what it means to be a citizen. And the answer won't be 95% don't know. It'll be maybe 5% don't know. And that's the sort of end game here. And because this is a non-judgmental way of achieving this, just like education was a way to eliminate illiteracy or numeracy problems, this is going to eliminate and improve, without having to send people to schools and big infrastructure and all the rest of it, this is a way to turn everybody into Justin Trudeau or Pierre Poilievre so that they can stand toe-to-toe with them on every single issue, no matter what their education or background is. And AI is the tool that enabled us to do this. And so we've put it together in such a way that, as I said, I think we were talking before, before the show started, and I had said, the history of this is we built four generations of prototype to test all these new technologies. You were at a couple of our events and sort of saw what we're doing. The fifth version, version 5.0, is coming out this summer, and that'll be the first we're live, not beta test, not, you know, here's the next generation prototype. This is make or break citizen time, okay? We will be judged based on our performance. And as you might expect, we're optimistic.
It's so exciting because there's so much that goes on that we feel like we don't have control over it, but there's always been a mechanism for people to have input. But, you know, whether the politicians listen to us, you know, so often we're told that the number of phone calls they get, you know, determines what sort of input they share with their party and their leader and that sort of thing. This is just like a dominant tool. I mean, I'm certain they'll be able to break it down by electoral district, which is the new name for riding for anyone who doesn't know. But the capability and backed up by education, right? And one of my visions for Exit 425 was, you know, the old civics for adults course, right? And I was one of those crazy teachers that actually enjoyed teaching civics. But, you know, it's lost on a lot of people because of the age that it's taught. Civics for adults, it becomes more meaningful. And then there's the people that say, well, I'm not really into politics. Well, this isn't
good. This is for them.
Yeah, exactly. And it's less about politics as it is governance. And there's That's two right. distinct things, although one does affect the other. But this covers all that. And it's pretty exciting. And you talked earlier, again, before we started recording, about being a tech geek. I'm kind of a civics geek that way. And you know, to get more people engaged and feeling like their opinion matters and that their input matters. And, you know, when people respond when they see a positive effect, right? Like, and if they've shared their opinion and something happens as a result of that, then they're going to be more engaged. And that's always pretty exciting. So I love this tool. I love the concept. I love the you know, practical manifestation of it. It's pretty amazing.
And, thank you.
And, you know, we systematically destroyed the next two questions that I had for you. and
try me.
Well, basically, you know, I could summarize them by saying, you know, an individual member of parliament, for instance, or MLA or whatever, would be a fool to not pay attention. And as would the party whips, because in this recent election, I had an independent candidate for Durham who talked about the party whips. And I think actually a couple others, more neutral, more center-based candidates, talked about how the party whips are controlling things. And, you know, for the party, you'd hope that reflects what the party wants. But for local citizens, we're hoping that, you know, and maybe dreaming a bit that reflects what we want. In this case, you know, a party member, a riding representative, MP, would be a fool to not pay attention. And the party whips would be foolish to not pay attention to what they're finding in Citizen AI.
Well, it you know, that's a great observation, okay? Paying attention. Would they or wouldn't they? The test is what they're already doing. See, the cool part of what we've done is I didn't decide I'm going to change politics, we're going to redesign the whole world. We designed something to fit right into their bag of tricks, okay? What we're doing is bringing them a better bag of tricks. And what that means is we're not whining about politicians being politicians. We want politicians to be politicians. It's their job to deliberate over what we want. We have been doing a terrible job telling them what we want. It's not their fault, okay? It's magnificent that they get out there every day and try to invent what we want, and they try to read it through the tea leaves, okay? Social media tea leaves, news tea leaves, knocking on door tea leaves, all these tea leaves. and all these predictive things like polling that have no value whatsoever over any extended period of time, okay, after the poll's taken. You got to have real-time bloody data if you want to have any influence on a politician. That's the only way to escape what is current status quo. Now, happily, I don't think you even have to convince them about this. I think you're right. I think they would be foolish to ignore it because it's a recipe for electoral harmony forever. Okay. And it's an echo system that tells everybody that they did it without them even having to participate. And they're not invited to the platform, by the way. Okay. This is another thing that's really, we're not waiting for them to sign up and create a profile like every other e-government. This is the people's estate. It's our commons. We will deliberate like a giant plenary forever on 1,000 issues. And we will tell the government specifically what to do at every level of government. Okay, right down to school boards. And then we'll get into bureaucracy too. So it's, you know, we're going to start small. We're going to start federal this summer only. Okay, we're going to work our way up. But the output of this is completely compatible with modern political life. And in fact, I would argue, once they suspend disbelief and the mandarins that won't like this, obviously, because they're going to lose their jobs, they're going to lose their contracts, and there's a whole bunch of shit. Once they realize how stabilizing a force this is and how engaging a force this is, they're not going to want to do politics any other way. And I want to add one last thing. None of the politicians today really have much influence anyway. Okay. And let me add something. If you took a study, and Princeton did this study, if a majority of people wanted X, what is the probability they would get it? The answer is 30%. If a minority of the people wanted X, what's the probability they would get it? 30%. Okay. There's an independent relationship between – there's no relationship and no bearing what the people want on what legislation is. Now flip it over. Agendas are set by power brokering elites, and I don't mean that in the populist sense of today. I mean it rather in the lobbyist, wealthy people, powerful people. These are the people – these people have an exceptional ability to influence policy. And let me tell you – the degree to which it is so. If let's say the people don't want something, none of them want it, and lobbyists get involved, what is the possibility that they will get what they want? 66%. Wow. What if the people want it and the lobbyists support it? 66%. Okay, so there's this independent relationship between elite power and outcome in legislation. And it doesn't matter what country you're in, okay? Canada famously has anti-lobbying laws. You can't really give all that money to much money to politicians. And yet, okay, it's roughly the same thing. The United States is free-for-all in terms of electoral cash, and it's the same deal. So, you know, people have their solutions to these things. The simple fact of the matter is that unless and until the people, the galleries at Parliament or Congress, have the power that these lobbyists have or that politicians have, they will never be able to write legislation, full stop. So the people have to turn themselves, for lack of a better term, into their own lobbyists without becoming lobbyists. So a citizen is not going to register as a lobbyist. We're not lobbyists. We are the people themselves, okay? And this sixth estate will be owned directly by the people, thereby collectively giving them the money and now the superpowers, as I call them, to influence government. So how do lobbyists and rich people get things done? Well, they sue the government or they influence the government through all manner of tools all the way along through lobbyists. Why can't people have that? Mm-hmm. We built it.
And I can't think of a more fitting punctuation mark for this conversation at this point. So Murray, thank you. I every time I talk to you, I'm so fired up by your passion for this and for the purpose of this tool. And it's really exciting. And it should be you know, a turning point in our governance, in our political history, and using technology for an extremely good purpose. So thank you so much for what you're doing, but thank you for taking the time to meet me here at Exit 425. I hope this is the first of several conversations we'll have recorded. Third, fourth of many others that we will have face to face. So right now, what's the best way for people to maybe reach out to you, certainly to learn more about Citizen AI? Yep.
So the simplest way is to sign up for our newsletter and to follow us on our social feeds. So the website, if you go onto it, citizen.world, so it's citizen with no E, .world, okay? So W-O-R-L-D. And there's a section, sign up for the newsletter, right at the top of the website. Put your name in there, and you'll get both a regular set of information on our progress, but most importantly, you'll get the invitation to download the 5.0 Generation Live app when it's released and announced. And that's months away. So I certainly hope that everything you just said is right, that this is the future of things. And Steve, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. I'd be honored to be back on the show.
Oh, that would be awesome. So much. So, so awesome. To all who are listening or watching, thank you for listening or watching this episode of Exit 425. Please like and subscribe on whatever platform you use. Our mission, not unlike Murray's, is to provide substantial information and education that goes where you want, physically and topically. Exit 425 is a production of Studio 38 Audio, copyright 2024. My name is Steve Ray. And if you have any questions or would like more information about Exit 425, join our Exit 425 Facebook group. Check out Instagram, LinkedIn, YouTube, and of course, TikTok. You can email me at exit425401@gmail.com. Exit 425. It's where we live.